This is a News Laundry podcast and you're listening to Reporters Without Orders.
Order, order. Hello and welcome to Reporters Without Orders, a podcast where we talk about what made news, what didn't, and some things that absolutely shouldn't have. I'm your host, Tanishka Sodhi, and joining me in the studio today is Quint's journalist, Himanshi Dahiya. Hi, Himanshi.
Hi, Tanishka.
Thank you for joining us and for twinning with me. Our second guest is News Laundry's very own Shiv Narayan Rajpurohit. Shiv is joining us online from Rajasthan. Where are you, Shiv, and what is the election fever like?
I'm in Jaipur right now, and election seems pretty boring for me.
Oh, no. Is the fever not, has it not started in Rajasthan, the campaigning, the rallies, all of it, the color?
No, yeah. So there are a couple of constituencies where I think two candidates have taken this election by storm. One is in Barmer, another one is in Banswara.
Okay.
So that's where I'm planning to go next.
Okay. Shiv and Himanshi have really interesting stories this week. Himanshi's story has taken the internet by storm, and I think rightly so. It details how a family of Gujarat Dalit farmers were tricked by an Adani-linked firm to donate electoral bonds worth rupees 10 crore to the BJP. This is like straight out of a fiction novel, so it seems. And Shiv is on election duty, but the story we're discussing is a media profile that Shiv has spent months working on. It's a profile of news agency ANI, and it's titled ANI's News Business, PR Contracts with CMs, Podcasts, and a Quest for Power. The title is juicy enough, and the story is also really, really interesting. Let's start with Shiv so we can let him get back to election reporting. Shiv, let's start with ANI's response to your story. You sent 24 questions and got replies for, I think, two of them. What were these replies, and what were the questions that were left unanswered?
I think the ANI's reply was very broad-based. It was kind of statement. So out of those 24 questions, they specifically replied to two questions. One was related to former ANI journalist Zain Awan, who had gotten an offer letter from Al Jazeera. He was heading the print and online division at the time in last year. And when he got the offer from Al Jazeera, ANI asked him to, he resigned, everything happened. Then ANI asked him to stay back, and ANI promised him that he would get higher salary. He declined the Al Jazeera offer, and he rejoined ANI after a few days. But then he was not given the same designation. He was not given the print and online divisions. He was asked to work with Smita Prakash podcast team, and I think that was kind of demotion for him. And they did not fulfill the promises that ANI had made to Zain Awan. So that was the one question that specifically replied to this. ANI said that when he resigned for the first time, I mean, he was very effusive in his praise towards ANI, saying that he was leaving ANI. ANI is like family for him. And then the second time he resigned, at the time his resignation letter was very critical of ANI, saying that he was cheated and humiliated because ANI did not fulfill its promises it had made to Zain Awan. The second question they specifically replied to was the family feud between, there were two factions in 2020-2021. One was led by Prem Prakash, who is the father-in-law of Smita Prakash. So Prem Prakash and Sanjeev Prakash, father and son duo, and the other side, there was mother and daughter duo. Mother being Daya Prakash and her daughter Seema Prakash. So there was kind of family feud related to transfer of shares, related to related party transactions, related to some of the family members getting more wages than others. So they specifically replied to this question, saying that all disputes within the family were resolved amicably. So these were the two questions they replied to. And other questions they kind of dismissed, saying that my questions were very, very vague and out of context.
So 22 questions left unanswered.
Yeah, and there were suggestions also that the fledgling digital properties of News Laundry. I mean, I've asked these questions because I want to boost, or maybe News Laundry wants to boost its fledgling digital properties. And ANI and News Laundry is not doing good. That's why they want to get some trade secrets from ANI through these questions.
Okay, maybe Anna is not aware of how many amazing subscribers we have, and that our work, unlike, I mean, I don't know about this, we will get to that, but our work is supported only by the public. We don't take advertisements, we don't have PR deals that we will get to. So yeah, do support our works.
I mean, such a story could only be possible because we are bankrolled by subscribers. Otherwise, I mean, I don't think so. How many newsrooms can give this much space, I mean, these many days to work on single profile. So, of course, we are grateful to subscribers.
Yes. And this brings me to my next question, which I think is the most startling bit of new information for me from the profile, which is about the PR packages that ANI has and has had with at least 7 state governments since 2010. What are these PR packages, Shiv? What are their price ranges? What governments has ANI had them with? And are they common for news agencies to have such PR packages?
I don't know about other news agencies since I was working only on ANI. In the market, ANI, right now, ANI has two small competitors. One is PTI, another one is INS. Both are very new in the video service segment. PTI started its video service segment last year, and INS is very recent. So I don't think so. They are able competitors. I think they will take time to catch up with ANI because ANI's network is huge. They have, I mean, in one of the books written by Prem Prakash, who is the founder of ANI, he writes that there are 400 cameramen, reporters, and stringers. The book was written in 2019. Maybe the number has gone up. But to answer your question about these PR packages, these PR packages are basically they sign PR packages with Department of Information and Public Relations of each state government. So what they do, they approach DIPR saying that they can promote a chief minister's image by using their social media platforms or their wire services, by tailing them everywhere they go. So any government event, they will cover. I mean, there are a lot of pointers in the proposal they send to each state government. The charge ranges from 48 lakh rupees to 1.5 crore rupees. If I could give you one example, in 2016, and we have access the internal email also of ANI. In 2016, ANI sent a proposal to then BRS government led by KCR, and they said that not only they will use their social media platforms to promote KCR's image, they will also use their partnership with Reuters to promote KCR's image abroad. So to sweeten the deal, they would take the name of Reuters because Reuters has 26% stake in ANI. Reuters, which talks about their brand of journalism. If you go to Reuters page where they talk about basic tenets of print, basic tenets of journalism, 10 hallmarks of journalism. So they talk about that we don't like, it's against our principles if somebody takes money for stories. So Reuters partner is doing this. Yeah.
Until the new FDI rules, they had a larger share of ANI, correct?
Yeah. So until a few years ago, Reuters had 49% stake in ANI, and in compliance with FDI rules, they brought their stake down to 26%. So these PR packages, then I think somebody from ANI would visit. Is it DIPR's director? I'm talking about the Telangana example. So one person called Rajesh Goad, he would meet DIPR director and he would thresh out the details that this is what the government wants. Can we improve upon the proposal? So that's how they would go about it.
And you did reach out to Reuters about this?
Yeah, yeah. I sent, I think, 7-8 questions to Reuters also. I told them that we have internal emails of ANI to showcase that they are involved in paid for news, and I also gave them the examples like your code of ethics talks about that nobody should take money, but ANI is your partner, so does it violate any code of ethics of Reuters? So, and there was 7-8 similar questions. Are you aware of, I also asked Reuters if they were aware of such paid promotions by ANI. And I also asked about the content of ANI. I also gave them the data analysis that I have done in the story, that every second tweet from ANI is on chief ministers. I'm talking about ANI's regional handles. So they did not reply to any of the questions specifically, but they said that they select and verify all ANI feed and take only a small amount of ANI videos. But they did not reply to my question whether they know about ANI's paid for promotions.
Right. So these, PR packages are essentially paid news, right? They are a different form of advertorials.
Yeah, it's paid news.
But I mean, unlike advertorials, they have no, there is no disclaimer. We won't, as a viewer, I won't know what is a paid news and what is them covering the event because it is of public importance, so to speak, correct?
Yeah, so my follow-up question to Reuters was, if you are saying that you select and verify a very small amount of ANI videos that you take for your international audience, how do you verify whether this, any video that you're taking is paid for or not?
Right.
But there was no reply.
Correct. And speaking about the data that you mentioned, that you've analyzed, how every second tweet from the two regional handles of ANI is on chief ministers. Tell us more about that, this data that you have collected.
Yeah, so I took random sample from April 1st to April 9th. And in that period, Rajasthan Chief Minister Bhajan Lal Sharma, the new Chief Minister, he contracted COVID. So if you see the instances of posts on Chief Minister, I mean, the posts would be fewer because they could not call Bhajan Lal Sharma for 3 days. So I don't have the numbers handy with me, but as I mentioned, the story that every second tweet from these two regional handles is on Chief Minister. And if you look at the overall picture, including overall picture of tweets posted by ANI Twitter handles on Rajasthan, on BJP chief ministers and party leaders. So it goes up to 66%, 70%. And one of the key findings of this data was that ANI's regional handle, which covers UP and I think Uttarakhand, if I'm correct. So in those 9 days, there were, I think, only three tweets on opposition leaders. One was a bite of Akhilesh. I mean, there were two bites of Akhilesh Yadav, one bite of Dimple Yadav, and one text story link of Farooq Abdullah. So only four tweets in those 9 days. I mean, that's alarming for any news media.
Yeah, and
so that just reinforces our investigation. It's not only that we have accessed the internal emails; we have also shown through our data that how biased or how partisan ANI is when it comes to covering opposition leaders.
Right. And coming to the person who I think currently is at the helm of operations at ANI, Ishan Prakash, who an employee has described as the Rahul Gandhi of ANI, not a description that I think will really go down well with him. But what is Ishan like?
With the Congress also, I think.
That's also true. So we have pissed off two sets of audiences through this one line. Great. But tell us about what employees told you about Ishan Prakash. How does he function? I read about how he also held a meeting with content creators of Wikipedia to discuss potential positive descriptions of ANI on the platform. So what other details were you able to, like, what is your sense of the man?
Ishan Prakash, if I could go back to Ishan Prakash's grandfather's book, Reporting India. So in that book, Prem Prakash describes Ishan as somebody who has brought in technology to the newsroom, brought in live view backpacks for live streaming of their videos. But when I spoke with the current and former employees of ANI, they were not very, they did not appreciate Ishan's work ethics. And some of the employees I mean, some of the employees who have quit, they blamed Ishan's rude behavior. As I gave you in the story, I've given a couple of examples. One of the employees who quit, he wrote to Chief Justice Chandrachud saying that he was harassed by a group of employees in ANI. And when he approached Ishan Prakash for resolution, Ishan Prakash blocked that employee's number. And another employee quit because Ishan shouted at him saying that why he could not take instruction, why he could not act on his instruction. But the employee was not even part of the WhatsApp group because I think that some message was sent. Ishan Prakash sent some message on WhatsApp group, and that employee was not even part of that WhatsApp group. So Ishan, so that employee said that Ishan Prakash did not have any locus tenens to shout at him because, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. But then he was not even part of the group. How can you take instruction from a group you're not part of? Out of frustration, and he was humiliated in the newsroom in front of everyone, and very senior employee. So he also quit, and he demanded apology from Ishan Prakash, but of course that apology would never come.
Right, and employees, have they also, your story details how employees have been fired for applying to PTI. Can you elaborate more on that? I mean, is there some sort of deal that PTI and ANI have about poaching employees, or on what grounds can you really fire employees for something like this?
I don't think so. There is any agreement or any understanding between PTI and ANI on poaching employees. But ANI is very anxious when its employees go to its competitor, PTI. A couple of employees I spoke to on this subject, they told me, in fact, one of the camera persons, he told me that the wages were very low, and he wanted to apply to PTI, but he was scared that this information might leak, because it's very hard to keep it secret if you apply to some other place. Somebody would know about it. So he told me a couple of examples. We haven't mentioned the examples because I thought that if I reveal the identity, or if I give specific examples, it might hurt in their career progression. So that employee told me that he wanted to apply to PTI, but he can't, because before getting offer from PTI, he might lose the job that he has right now. So these are the, I mean, employees are in a fix at ANI how to apply, because ANI camera persons or ANI specifically camera persons, they have a specific set of skills, because he was telling me that it will be very hard for him to work in a TV studio, and it'll be easier for him to work in PTI video agency, because the set of skills which are required are similar. So one of the employees, I think he was fired the moment ANI got to know that he had applied to PTI. And a couple of more examples.
Okay. And we'll let you go soon, Shiv. But if you can, before going, just sort of also tell us about ANI's coverage of communal issues. That is a point you have also touched upon in the story. If there is anything that stands out, or when it comes to revealing identities of certain crimes, what you have found out.
It's a common knowledge that ANI is very selective when it comes to revealing the identity of accused in any case. So they are very quick in revealing the identity of Muslim accused compared to Hindu accused. It's been documented, I think, Alt News in 2018 or 19 but they pointed it out they gave some 10 or 15 examples. I asked ANI employees what is the editorial policy in this regard. So they told me that there are no clear guidelines when to reveal identity, when not to reveal identity. Since there are no clear guidelines on this, so employees also work in consonance with what ANI owners, I mean, in consonance with ANI owners, owners, so to say, ideology. So they know which way they lean, so they just play along because there are no clear guidelines on revelation of identity. Another thing that I want to highlight is passing off BJP workers or BJP leaders as citizens of so-and-so city. I mean, hiding identity of BJP leaders and workers if they go to rallies or they interview someone. So the recent example that I gave in my story was inauguration of Azamgarh Airport, few airport projects. So Modi went to Azamgarh, I think, last month. And there, ANI interviewed one Muslim man. And when I checked, that guy turned out to be former president of Azamgarh's Minority Morcha. And now he is the working committee member, at the state level.
Okay.
So there are so many examples.
Yeah. And the former ANI journalist told you that ANI is the most loved child of the BJP. So I think that is something that we can also really put together.
There is a reason why he said so, because... So if you compare Manmohan Singh foreign tours with Narendra Modi's foreign tours, now Narendra Modi, Prime Minister Narendra Modi takes only ANI on his foreign tours. ANI is the only non-government media house that goes with Modi. Another thing is their coverage. So I looked at the data, YouTube data, for 3 days, because I just want to see how, to what extent they covered opposition's Maharally, Lok Tantra Bachao Maharally, which happened in Delhi on March 31st. So even at that time, the coverage is heavily tilted towards BJP. And in Maharally, they did not take bites from audience members. But when Modi kicked off Lok Sabha campaign from Meerut, there were 3-4 bites of audience members praising Narendra Modi, saying he's the best PM ever, so and so forth. So that shows how close ANI is to the government. Another thing is Prakash family also went to Ayodhya during Ram Janmabhoomi's, during the Ram Temple consecration day, on the Ram Temple consecration day, yeah.
Right, as did I think a lot of media barons, and a lot of more interesting details in Shiv's profile, which you can catch on our page.
Just one little question. I mean, it sounds like a very interesting profile. I've not read it yet. But what about ANI's coverage of issues like, let's say, a Manipur crisis, or, you know, issues where it is nearly almost impossible to give it a positive spin? So what about, did you try to get in touch with their reporters or their camera persons or stringers? I mean, whatever they call them in these areas, and do they send inputs and they're not taken, or are they asked to send a particular type of input? So how does that work?
On the Manipur question, how ANI covered Manipur, I want to cite one reference in the book written by ANI's founder Prem Prakash. In the last chapter, he talks about, or he in fact laments, how mainstream media has neglected the Northeast, because somebody said it's because of tyranny of distance. So he said that the ANI is going to change it. In fact, it's part of my questionnaire too, how ANI has covered Manipur. I asked them, how do you see your coverage of Manipur crisis? Of course, there was no reply. But I checked their coverage on their main Twitter handle. So their coverage is mostly limited to taking bites from Biren Singh, or just showing visuals that the curfew has been lifted or curfew has been imposed. I didn't see any bite from people who were the worst, people or areas which were the worst affected in that violence. In fact, they interviewed Amit Shah a few days back, last month, I think, after CA rules were notified, and there was no question from Smita Prakash on Manipur crisis, because Manipur crisis is still raging, and it's a sad commentary on ANI's coverage, how what its founder wanted ANI to do and what the current crop of management is doing.
Definitely. Thank you, Shiv. Thank you for all the time. And would urge our viewers to catch his report, which is very detailed, and you can find it on our website. And to also know what Shiv is doing in Rajasthan right now, stay tuned. The report, I hope, will be coming out very soon. So thanks, Shiv. All the best.
Oh, okay. Cool. Thanks.
Himanshi, we've made you wait for a long time, but I promise our viewers this wait is worth it, because Himanshi's story is, I think, one of the most excellent forms of journalism we have seen in the last few months or years as well. It's titled Electoral Bonds, Gujarat Dalit Farmer Tricked into Donating Rupees 10 Crore to the BJP. Himanshi, if you can just summarize the story for us in a couple of lines first.
Right. I mean, first, thank you for having me on the podcast. It's always great to be back. About the story, yes, it's a story about how a Dalit family in Gujarat was tricked into or duped into giving rupees 11 crore and 14,000 in electoral bonds. This was the money that they got after their land, their agricultural land, was acquired by a Gujarat-based company. It's called Wellspun. And this money, instead of being, credited to the farmer family, was instead diverted to electoral bonds. 10 crore was then encashed by BJP, and 1 crore and 14,000 was encashed by the Shiv Sena. So this is the story. And of course, there are multiple layers to it, because on the surface, while this looks like, you know, that one instance of cheating, the whole scam really started in 2022, when the land deal itself started. And that is another story in itself. I mean, how a stretch of land which was initially valued at rupees 76 crore was eventually sold for just rupees 16 crore and approximately rupees 16 crore. And it's not just the farmer family that was cheated in the whole thing. The Gujarat government also suffered some losses, because if the land would have been sold for 76 crore as it was initially valued at, the government would have got a 40% premium, which comes to something nearly rupees 30 crore. And the rest of the money would have gone to the farmer, 34 crore. So, it's a scam where a farmer family was allegedly cheated, the government was cheated, and we know who benefited. So, yeah.
So, what exactly happened at the time? You spoke to the farmer, or I think the farmer's son as well. So, what did they tell you? How did they really be tricked by an official of the company that is also has links to Adani? I think Adani has some shares of the company. So, tell us about what happened then.
Yeah, I mean, so it's as bizarre as it gets, because, first, before we actually start talking about what happened then, we need to understand who are these people. I mean, this is a Dalit farmer family in a very remote, really remote village in Gujarat. A lot of people, when I shared the story, a lot of comments online were, you know, how can a Dalit family have 11 crores to spare? Or, if they had 11 crores to spare, they for normal average people, they're not allegedly poor. Like, right. You know, that whole, this thing that we also got while we were covering the farmers' protest. You know, how can farmers ride Mercedes or how can they come in these huge vehicles?
Nakli farmers.
So, I mean, this is a farmer family, which is probably like six members jointly held some 43,000 square meter of land. And they were to get this compensation. And when you divide, this is their ancestral land. This is the land that they got when the zamindari system was abolished sometime in the 1960s. And, you know, a lot of surplus land was reallocated by the government to the landless. So they were a landless family and they got this amount of this stretch of land. Now, the deal started in 2022 when the company wanted to acquire the land, and a land acquisition committee was formed. The committee valued the land at 76 crore rupees. The company, which is Wellspun here, which has links with the Adani group, they did not want to pay this amount. They thought it's too much. And the whole process kept dragging on for a year. In swoops another, you know, the previous committee was headed by the collector. Now there's a deputy collector in picture, and he somehow manages to convince the farmers that, okay, you know, sell it for 16 crore rupees. For a family, for them, even 16 crore is nothing less. I mean, they were like, okay, they did not clarify how they got convinced.
Yeah.
But they were convinced into selling the land for 16 crore rupees. Now, when time actually came for them to get the money, so this one Mahendra Singh Soda, an official I've named in my report,
yeah,
he held the farmer. This is the farmer's accusation that he and a local BJP leader called Hemant Rajnikant Shah, they held meetings with the family for a week. So four meetings were held within a span of a week. And they told the farmer that, listen, 11 crore is a lot of money. Some money was already given to them in advance because the price was 16 crore.
Hmm.
So some money was given to them in advance. And then they said, ki, you know, 11 crore is a lot of money. You might run into troubles with the income tax department. Hmm. So then they introduced them to this new scheme, which is called the electoral, which is called the electoral bond scheme. And they managed to convince them that aap isme paisa daliye. And what will happen is you will get 1.5 times more money in a few years.
My God.
So for that family, what I was told, I mean, I asked them, ki, aap, did you know ki, what are electoral bonds? Aapko kya bataya gaya? So they were like, you know, hum anpad log hain. We don't know what all of this is. But at that time when an official we were in touch with for so long and a local leader, BJP leader, they tried to convince us, we got convinced.
Yeah, you assume it's in good faith.
Yeah. And also, it was promising great returns. I mean, almost 1.5 times the original amount. So that's how they got convinced. And then they were taken to Gandhinagar. This is the whole thing happened in Kutch.
Hmm.
Wahan se they were taken to Gandhinagar, where there's the only SBI branch in Gujarat that sells electoral bonds is there. So they were taken there, and electoral bonds were then purchased in the name of 6 members of their family. So that is how they were basically duped into giving this money. And then they, of course, tried to follow up with the official every few months, and they were told that, don't worry, your money is safe and you'll eventually get the returns. But once the scam came out, it was then that some you know, people in the village who are slightly more aware of what's happening in the news, and, you know, this lawyer who's helping them now, right, they found out that, okay, you know, this has happened with them. They told the family that, okay, you know, you've been cheated, actually. So that's how they found out. And since then, they've been trying to call the official and there's no response. In fact, they filed a police complaint on 18th March.
Yeah.
The police is yet to register an FIR. I mean, it's, I think, 10th April today.
You spoke to the police as
I
well.
I did, yeah. They're saying we're doing a preliminary investigation, and if the case merits, we will register an FIR. But I mean, I think 1 month, it's almost a month or a half a month at least. That's a long time for the cops to do though.
And where is the company in all this? Are they still in the picture? Are they a profitable company? Did you reach out to them? Were there any response?
I did reach out to the company. Sadly, there was no response. And their role in this is that, one, they are, it's a profitable company, but they're also named in the complaint along with the official. It's not like the farmers just accused the official of the forgery. The company itself is named in the complaint, so they should be investigated.
And is the official still part of the company? Are you aware?
He is. Okay. In fact, the farmer I spoke to, Haresh Savakara, he's the son of the person in whose name the land was, one of the people. He was employed by the company on contractual basis. This happens in a lot of land deals. Now, he's still employed, but two other family members have been fired.
Okay.
By the company.
Right.
So, yeah, the company is still very much in the picture.
And how did they decide to write a complaint? I mean, did that come when they found out? What was their initial reaction? I mean, you had a quote from the farmer, but I'm assuming you had a longer conversation. So just what struck you the most about this?
I mean, yeah, they of course felt cheated, and they felt that, okay, you know, we really thought whatever was happening in good faith. And this is a family of poor farmers who really had high hopes that, you know, they're investing the money in a scheme which would guarantee them really high returns. And when that doesn't happen, and then they're trying to reach out to people and nobody's actually registering a complaint.
Yeah.
It's not that I found this story and, you know, the story was already out there.
Yeah.
People around knew, I'm sure. If they registered a complaint on 18th March, that's a long time.
Yeah.
How is it that an FIR has not yet been registered? So they were slightly helpless that, you know, despite us putting all facts and proofs out there, how is it that nothing is actually happening and the case is not really moving ahead.
Right. And how did this amount reach the BJP and the Shiv Sena? Did they donate to them or was there some sort of... did it go through via something?
No. So, I mean, the money was directly used to purchase electoral bonds.
Yeah.
What happened was that because only one person in the family is educated, who's also just a ninth pass individual, they took 2-3 people to Gandhinagar. Mm. And according to the family, they were accompanied by Mahindra Singh Soda, who is a Welspun employee, and Hemant Rajnikant Shah, who's right. a BJP leader. These are the allegations by the family. And they said that, you know, we were taken to the bank. We were given some documents and we signed on those documents.
Yeah.
So they did not really know that they were donating the money to BJP.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they chose the party from what I've understood. It was just documents they signed on with things already checked. But this really opens, I think, a fresh can of worms. You know, you think there are shocking details coming out of the electoral bonds data set. And then there is a story every couple of weeks and your story, which really makes you wonder how many more such cases there could be, similar cases in the list, people who have been duped this way.
For sure. I mean, when the first set of data came out and then, you know, subsequently two more sets of data were released by EC and SBI. Yeah. Even on 14th March, when the first set of data came out, what we saw was, okay, there were big companies, big corporations who had donated, but there were these individuals who were purchasing electoral bonds. And I think a lot of us were really curious, who are these people and why are they donating to a political party? Even if you do support a political party, it's highly unlikely for people to go out there and fund them.
Yeah, I mean, ordinary people with...
Yeah, I mean, if you like a person, if you like a political leader, you don't really go and give them money. I mean, that's very unlikely. You go participate in the rallies, you do want to spread the message, you do want to promote them, but in different ways and not by actually giving money. So it was a curious case, but then, you know, it's almost impossible to really track these individuals down.
Yeah.
Because you only know their names. I mean, if Himanshi Dahiya is mentioned in the electoral bonds list, there can be... a lot of Himanshi Dahiyas in India, you can't really reach the one individual who's purchased the bonds.
Yeah.
So this was a stroke of luck that there is a person out there who was cheated and he decided to file a complaint and decided to come out. But you're right. I mean, there can be a lot of such individuals who were tricked into buying these bonds.
And what are the links that the Adani Group has with this company and what does this company do exactly?
Right. So, I mean, I think this was a News Laundry itself has covered this very in great detail. Welspun and Adani are together in another, they have a venture together, a joint venture, which is called the Adani Welspun Exploration Limited.
Hmm.
And I think Adani Group has a 65% holding in the venture and Welspun has a 35% holdings. It is a gas exploration company and like a lot of other Adani businesses, this deals with, operates in the same sector. So there might not be a very direct connection with this particular case, but we know that, you know, there is this whole web of companies which work together.
Right.
And like the News Laundry report itself did establish that they might, Adani has so far refused that they purchased any electoral bonds, but we do know a few companies who are linked to Adani and then they have...
And I mean, they even had a press release about their tie-up with Welspun, right?
Yeah,
so that's not exactly a deniable claim.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret. It's literally them putting it out there that, okay, you know, we're partners in a particular firm and this is what we do.
Yeah, and I mean, since your story has come out a couple of days ago, Himanshi, there's been a lot of, I think regional media has picked it up a lot. Ravish Kumar also did a video report. I mean, he mentioned the story and elaborated on it. And I think a couple of days before you, even Web News Dunya, a Gujarati outlet, reported on this. But have you noticed how big media has sort of taken this forward? Because, I mean, in an ideal world or in a world where the media is free and fair, This would be, I mean, the talking point of television channels. It would be, you know, front page news because this is, of course, in one way, it's a bizarre story. It's, you know, stranger than a fiction sort of case. But on the other case, it's also a blatant fraud, right? I mean, it speaks about so many other things. So what is your perspective of how big media has or has not really taken this forward?
I mean, it's sad and unfortunate, but I'm not surprised. I don't think even you are.
Yeah.
This has been the trend over the last few years, maybe about a decade or so, that the big media, especially television, they do not report on such stories.
Right.
I mean, the fact that almost all television channels and most big papers do have a state correspondent in Gujarat, or some even have a full-fledged bureau. How is it that they couldn't get to the story first?
Yeah.
You know, it's not that, you know, I had to dig into something. I mean, I want to really emphasize, this is not a story where I dug into some papers and, you know, found something which nobody... It was a story out there. It was a story which somebody just had to think it fit to pick it up. And just by the nature of how bizarre it is, it should have been. But they didn't, and it really reflects on the state of media today.
Yeah. It seems like a big enough thing that even the media, despite all its biases, would not be able to ignore.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we thought at least, that, you know, they have all the resources. They have dedicated business teams, you know, who might know these companies off the tips, and, you know, they'll just quickly start churning out these stories. And look what happened. I mean, they really didn't do anything, which was... Most stories around electoral bonds which came out did actually come out via the independent portals and platforms. And so, yeah, it kind of... I really don't need to comment on it. It's self-explanatory.
Yeah. Here. Tell us more about these meetings, if you have information about these four meetings that were held that week with the local BJP leader, the official from Wellspun, and the farmer's family. What were they discussing? Were they negotiations, or were they coming up with different ways the money could be transferred?
Yeah, so I mean, from what I've been told, one, the meetings were held in a guest house in the Wellspun company's compound.
Right.
So it's not like it was a secret meeting held somewhere in a remote, bizarre place. It was a meeting being held out there. And along with Wellspun company's employees, there was this local BJP leader who was present. And what they were actually, I think the conversation that was happening was around, you're right, how to purchase these bonds, how many people are going to receive this money. Ideally, the money from the land deal should have gone to their Grameen bank, but instead it was transferred to Axis Bank's. New accounts were opened in a private bank, and through that, money was transferred to those accounts. And they have shared the receipts with me, where if today the money is transferred to the account, credited to the account, tomorrow it's debited via an SBI account in Gandhinagar for electoral bonds. So I think it was mostly about, one, of course, convincing the family that, you know, you should give money, and why you should give money, because it will guarantee high returns, and because it will help you, you know, not attract any income tax officials. And also the other half of planning that I'm being told was happening around how to go and purchase these bonds, so that it doesn't really raise a lot of eyebrows that, you know, why is one particular person purchasing electoral bonds worth rupees so much?
And were there other lands that were also being acquired at the same time in the area, or was this the only one that was at that time?
So Wellspun has been acquiring land in that area for a while, for a few years actually. So I mean, basically, like I mentioned, right, this is agricultural land that was reallocated, surplus agricultural land that was reallocated to the landless after the abolition of the zamindari system. Now, according to the original laws, the agricultural land ceiling laws, you cannot actually sell this land. If a farmer holds this land, you cannot actually sell it.
Yeah.
It's a non-transferable land. But over the years, a lot of amendments have been brought in by governments in several states, which do tend to favor private entities or big corporates, so to say. And, you know, they've introduced clauses as to how, if somebody actually wants to acquire this land for some greater economic good of the state, they can, by following some procedures. Part of that procedure is to form a land acquisition committee, which will have representatives from the government, from the farmers, and, you know, multiple shareholders will be involved.
Right.
So, and that happens for a lot of cases. Now, the interesting thing in this case is that it's not actually this family that is the whistleblower. The whistleblower is another person whose land got acquired by this company in 2017.
Okay.
But of course, the money wasn't channeled to electoral bonds. It went somewhere else.
And that was before it even...
before the bonds were even introduced.
Yeah.
So now that person, his land was acquired and he did not get the compensation. He did approach the courts. He did approach the police. So he tried to, you know, he ran pillar to post to actually get justice and couldn't. And since then, he's been keeping track of, you know, everything that the company does and what's happening and what's not happening. So he is the person who actually found out. He then approached this family that, listen, you've been, you know, itna bada fraud hua hai aapke saath. He is the person who then also helped them reach the lawyer. So it's basically one person who did not get justice back in the day, right, now trying to help someone else. So yeah, I mean, if somebody does go deep into looking as to how the company goes around acquiring these lands, I'm sure
there's a bigger story.
There's a bigger story there.
And how many days did it take you to do this story? And was it were the family comfortable speaking to you? Did they want this to reach more people to highlight what they've gone through? Also, since the FIR has not been lodged yet.
Right. So I mean, I think the story took about 5 to 6 days to materialize. The family was more than eager to talk. Yeah. And they did actually want the story to reach to more people, because previously, like you said, Web Duniya News, this is a very small local Gujarati news portal which did report on it, but it did not really make it to the talking points, or, you know, nobody was really discussing it. So they were very much comfortable. It did take 5 to 6 days because all of the paperwork was in Gujarati, and unfortunately, I can't read Gujarati. So a lot of Google Translate and, you know, actually referring to somebody who knows Gujarati to understand some intricacies and details that happened. That took some time. Then, you know, I also reached out to all those stakeholders and gave them some time to respond. Yeah. And so I think it in all, it did take 5 to 6 days. But yeah, the family was more than willing to come out and talk.
And before we end the podcast, you've also done another story a couple of days ago, which I really enjoyed. And I'd like to just touch upon it. If you can tell us the trend that you guys have found on the pro-Hindutva films released this year, this election year in 2024. What was the trend that you guys have found when it comes to funding and when it comes to being promoted by certain netas?
Right. I mean, I think we started observing this trend since the Kashmir Files released, right? I mean, there was just suddenly this propaganda movies are not new, but with Kashmir Files, I think a lot of people found out that well-made propaganda actually sells.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did see a lot of big BJP leaders and somebody like, you know, really influential people in the government actually promoting it. So now when we saw that elections are just around the corner and, you know, OTT platforms and theaters have really rolled out the red carpet for a lot of these films, we decided that, okay, let's look into who's funding these movies. So in a lot of cases, we only took movies which have released in 2024 or are set to release. And there were either people linked to the RSS or people directly linked to the BJP who are investing money in these stories and, you know, funding these productions.
And these are not OTT movies, right? These are movies that are released in theaters, or is it a mix of both?
It is a mix of both, but mostly in theaters, yes. Yeah. And then it's not just about the funding part of it. Even after the films are released, they do go that walk that extra mile to actually promote them, right?
Right.
I mean, making these films tax-free or organizing free screenings for people to just come and watch.
Kerala Story is being broadcasted by Doordarshan in Kerala, which is really something. So, again, very interesting story. And I would urge our viewers to read both of these stories by Himanshi. Quint is also an independent news organization. And you're not really seeing these stories like the ones that Shiv and Himanshi have done. And of course, our coverage on electoral bonds as well in mainstream media. So, you know, continue to support us. Elections are just around the corner. Himanshi's been on the field and is going again, as are we. So do support us. We have an NL Sena project, News Laundry and News Minute, because we're covering the elections together. This time we have a few NL Senas based on different issues up on our page. So you can choose what kind of stories you'd like to see and contribute accordingly. Head on to newslaundry.com and pay to keep news free. Thank you, Himanshi, but I'm not going to let you go yet. We're going to ask you for a recommendation for our viewers.
I mean, because we did touch upon the other story on Hindutva movies, the pro-Hindutva movies which are being promoted by BJP. I think I would urge our viewers here to actually read that story. It's available on the Quint's website, and it's a story I've done with my editor and colleague, Aditya Menon.
Yeah.
So please do go watch, go read that story. And I'm also reading this book, which is sounding interesting. It's the Gita Press and Making of a Hindu India by Akshay Mukul. I mean, it's an old book, but I only got time to read it now. So it's really interesting. And if it interests the viewers, they can also just go read it.
So my recommendation for our viewers is one Assamese movie called Amis. This movie is about a lonely housewife and a student, how they fall in love over their love for food, non-veg food.
Sure. So I am going to recommend a story on Boom Decode that is written by actually my former ACJ batchmate, Akshat Chawla. It's about how National Creators Award winners amplified BJP's message. So there was, I think, the first National Creator Award that took place a couple of months ago. And Boom has done an analysis that has found that over 60% of the winners have posted content related to Hinduism, have met BJP leaders, or have endorsed the ruling party's policies or ideologies. So since this is going to be, an annual award, and this is coming, at the heat of elections, it really makes for an important story given the influence of influencers, so to speak. So that's my recommendation. And with that, this podcast is adjourned.
News Laundry is possible because of our paying subscribers. We don't run on corporate or government ads. You too can be part of changing the news model. Go to newslaundry.com/subscription. Be a part of the community that pays to keep news independent. For the smoothest News Laundry experience, download our app. Watch our shows, listen to our podcasts, read our reports, stay informed, pay for news, protect democracy, save the world.